This is VK6ARN, News West. We are a community organisation and we've been serving up the best amateur radio news in Australia since 1931. Good morning, I'm Clinton, VK6FCRC, and welcome to News West. Now let's get started with today's news.
Hi, I'm Bob, VK6POP. How's your radio week been? I've spent most of my radio time this week using free DV. I have a few people interested in setting up and evaluating free DV for a review that I'll be writing for QTC magazine, which is due to be published around the 8th of November. Free DV version 2 is a huge leap ahead in digital voice communication. I've been having voice communications with Eastern State stations on 40 metres in late afternoon and early evenings. 40 metres at those times can be a bit hit and miss, however. I've also tried 20 metres with very good results. I've also had some good local contacts on 40 metres using free DV. Now back to QTC magazine. We accept advertisements for club activities at no cost, so make your ads either half or full page. And the deadline for the next QTC is the 5th of November. We accept paid advertising from businesses. Contact Rasa for details. We're always on the lookout for good amateur radio-related photos for the front cover of QTC. We accept stories or articles. Please send them in plain text or DocX format with photos attached and insert place markers within the document for picture placement. We try to keep technical items light as we can use hot links within the document for further information. Besides, we're very much aiming at supporting newcomers to the hobby, so items requiring an electronics engineering degree to understand them may not make the cut. The single point of contact for QTC items is info@vkradioamateurs.org. info@vkradioamateurs.org. And QTC magazine is published by Rasa every month. It's an electronic magazine, can be read on screen or downloaded, and it's free and available to anyone wanting to read it. Rasa's website is vkradioamateurs.org. And I'm Bob, VK6POP.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with this week's episode of Did You Know? Today I thought I'd talk about CTCSS. Anyone who has completed a foundation course recently would have heard the basics of the use of CTCSS, but also that only one repeater in WA seems to use it. What is CTCSS and why do we use it? Well, CTCSS is a subaudible tone used to validate a received signal prior to allowing that signal to be either presented to a speaker or, in the case of a repeater, presented to the transmitter for retransmission. The tone is typically transmitted about 500 Hz deviation, remembering that the deviation of a normal voice transmission is 5 kHz, so presents to the receiver as a much louder signal, and uses as one of a set of tones universally recognised and available in any radio employing CTCSS. The reason for using the tone is that it assists in ensuring no interference or invalid signal can trigger a repeater, where repeaters share a common frequency, prevents the two repeaters from locking up, i.e. each repeater triggering the other during periods of ducting, and from a mobile or portable perspective, prevents invalid signals from presenting to your speaker. On 2 metres in particular, there are many devices that will overload most ham rig receivers, often at traffic lights or around service stations. Rogue paging transmitters will also often interfere, again mostly on 2 metres. Ham rigs are often dual band radios and by definition need to have reasonably wide filtered receiver front ends, so tend to be a bit more susceptible to interference, even by devices that are actually compliant to Australian specifications. In the commercial radio sector, CTCSS has been mandatory for decades and is very commonly used. In fact, I don't think I've ever come across an analogue radio system not using either CTCSS or a proprietary protocol carrying out the same purpose. On the East Coast, where there are obviously many more hams and more repeaters in close proximity, CTCSS has become much more commonplace. In WA, there are far less repeaters using common frequencies where you actually need to use something like CTCSS, so we tend not to use this. The benefits of using CTCSS, though, even maybe only on a repeater transmitter so that users can employ receiver protection if they so desire, are definitely worth the effort, which in most cases is just a matter of reprogramming the feature into the configuration of the repeater or user radio. CDCSS has been a standard feature of any ham rig built since the early 80s, and even for the older radios, there's still one or two companies online selling CDCSS encoder decoder boards that can add the feature to the oldest radios. I would suspect the percentage of radios in WA not capable of using CDCSS, though, would be well under a percent. Speaking to other hams about this feature has brought out some interesting reasons why we shouldn't implement it. It's not needed, is one of the biggest ones. However, I think most of us have had to turn the 2 meter rig down when passing a service station, for instance, so I can see why it could be needed. Some radios might not have that feature. I believe some members of our community tracked down a rogue paging transmitter that was interfering with a local simplex channel or repeater. I'm not sure the exact details. Had CTCSS been employed, the interference would have only been noticeable very close to the location of the interfering transmitter, where the interference was a higher signal than the valid transmission. If you have a radio that's more than 40 years old, might be a good time to convince the trouble and strife that you need a new rig. If you have a homemade radio, then I'm sure implementing this feature could be a walk in the park. So, struggling to think of the next club project? Maybe this one should be it. Thanks for listening. This has been Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know?
When you're new to the hobby of amateur radio, there are trials, tribulations and trepidations you can face as a new amateur. In my experience, you can learn a lot while in the company of other amateurs, and to this end, I encourage you to find a friend, join a club and both talk and listen on air in order to develop your skills and your confidence. What we do need to discuss is what sort of equipment you'll use to get on air. And here's the crunch. You've looked at the websites and the catalogues and wondering if you'd get away with mortgaging your granny or selling a kidney to raise enough funds to buy all this wonderful equipment. Yes, indeed, you can spend as much money as you can find on amateur radio. And by the same token, you can spend remarkably little. Firstly, let's get this out of the way. If money is no object and you have lots of it, the first thing you could do after giving some cash to me is to go out and spend up on amateur radio equipment. But wait a minute, what will you buy? You need to first look at what you plan to do, how much time you'll actually be able to put into your new hobby. Yes, you could buy a $10,000 rig, pay someone to erect a tower and antennas, but if you're only going to use it for a few hours a month, isn't that a bit of overkill? So you really should be honest with yourself and don't go overspending on a bit of kit with 100 buttons and knobs and you'll only use 10 of them. There's lots of second-hand rigs around, so you don't need to insist on brand new. However, do be aware of the prices of new gear when buying second-hand. Sometimes new doesn't cost much more. You must also remember that a nice transceiver on your desk is useless without antennas and feed lines. These must be factored into your plans and your budget for the purchase of equipment. Again, ask around. Pick other people's brains. Look at what they have and how it works. Everyone will tell you that brand X is the best. We're really strong on brand loyalty for some reason. In the long run, however, you'll need to make up your own mind and go for what you think is best for you. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. The other day I went on my first POTA or Parks on the Air adventure. This time, I was on my own. If you recall, my power company announced yet another planned network outage, and I felt that I could use this time without electricity to my benefit, for a change. As is traditional, I did all the prior planning to prevent pretty poor performance. I made a list, checked that all the items on the list were in my kit, packed the kit days before, put it all ready to go in the hallway the night before, packed the car on the day, and set out on my adventure. I will confess that I was slightly more sweaty than anticipated when I set off because the umbrella in the boot of my car has a nasty and recurring habit of getting in the way. Specifically, it stops things from getting pushed right to the full depth of the boot. Mind you, it wasn't until I started getting agitated that I realized that it wasn't the umbrella's fault entirely this time, since, as it turns out, the folding chair that I was attempting to jam in place doesn't actually fit long ways into the boot. Anywho, I set off and visited the local petrol station. I was not prepared for a customer to spend 15 minutes dribbling the last bit of diesel into their pretend sports utility vehicle, but he looked like he was up for a fight, so I smiled sweetly and waited for him to pay and move his box on wheels. After paying for my own fuel and driving off, the pressure in my bladder had gotten beyond the cross your legs and hope for the best stages, and I swiftly made my way to the nearest shopping complex, where a local pharmacist helpfully told me that there were no toilets in the building and that the local hotel or fast food joint were the place to relieve the pressure. One problem. They were both closed. At this point, I was in pain and discovered that I couldn't read the screen on my mobile phone in the lovely sunlight because it was set to battery saving mode, since my charger was at home where the power was out. After disabling the battery saving mode, I opened the local public toilet map shortcut on my phone and discovered that fortunately the shortcut still worked, opening up my default browser, which suddenly didn't want to display a map. Copied the URL to another browser, still in pain, finally a map. Click on the nearest icon and it navigates me there from Darwin, or over 4,000 kilometers from where I actually am. Luckily, it has the GPS location, which I copy and then paste into my mapping app, and I can finally navigate to the nearest toilet. Several comment-worthy navigation moves later, I drive into the car park, lock the car, painfully shuffle to the building, do my business in the very clean facilities, and then decide that I should just stop, sit, and take a breath. So I get in the car and discover that my partner was right when they heaped scorn on our newly acquired thermos cup. It really does hurt your nose when you try to drink from it, and the sharp edges in your mouth do nothing to make the experience joyful. Meanwhile, there's some trucks moving around in the car park, and a guy walks up to the car to ask me if I can move because they want to move a third, or was it fourth, truck into the space. I swallow my sip of restorative coffee, wipe the now wet bridge of my nose, and move the car, only to be blocked from leaving the exit thanks to the slowest reversing truck I've ever encountered, one who then proceeds to sit at the next intersection for 5 minutes without indicating where it was going. Are we having fun yet? I finally made my way to the main road, where I attempted to calm my nerves with the help of a Morse code edition of my podcast. It's been the only exposure I've had to Morse for way too long. This accompanies me to my first destination, breakfast. I'm going to skip past the drivers in the centre lane driving at 10 kilometres per hour below the posted speed limit, or the ones who think that jumping out of a side street in front of you is normal and safe driving practice. At every traffic light, I celebrate the pause with a sip from my coffee and a furtive wipe of my nose, which is being assaulted by the lid of the cup. I arrive at my breakfast destination and fear the worst. Their car park is almost empty. I've never seen it this quiet, and I didn't check to confirm that they were open or not. I look at my map application and remember to turn my phone back to battery saving mode. According to the internet, my cafe is open, so I cross my fingers and get out of the car. To my delight, they are absolutely open, make me a lovely breakfast and provide the needful for lunch too. I have a big day planned after all. After enjoying breakfast and hot chocolate with two marshmallows, I get back in the car and navigate to my planned setup location. As I drive into the park, I notice something that I hadn't the last time I was here. I'm descending, as in, the deeper into the park I go, the more I go downhill. That in and of itself isn't a cause for concern were it not for the fact that the local repeaters are on the hilltops that overlook the city, and I'm several hills inland and travelling into a valley. I'm keeping my eyes open for side roads and alternatives, but gamely proceed to the formal entrance of the park, where I pay my $17 to have a car with a maximum of 12 passengers enter the national park. I drive to the location I have planned and discover that there's a car park quite close to the gazebo I've earmarked, so I park there. I figure that before I get all set up in the gazebo for a day of radio, I should first check what I can learn from where I'm parked, especially since I'll need to pull the gear out of the car either way. Before I get out of the car, I attempt to mark my actual location on the map, only to discover that there's no mobile phone coverage. So much for using Echolink as a fallback. I pull out the folding table, which neatly fits next to the car, dig out the coax from the boot and lead it out the passenger door. The other end is connected to the boot lip mount that has been there for years. In case of failure, I did bring a magnetic base. But I'm optimistic. I remove the HF and VHF multiband antennas from their storage spot, taped to the driver's side rear passenger roof grab handle, and pull out the previously errant folding chair. All is going well. I pull out the spare coax and my anxiety spikes a little. This is what I think might be what causes me to come unstuck. It's a 10 meter or so length of coax. It's untested, terminated with BNC, and I'm concerned that I didn't bring enough adapters beyond the BNC to PL259 and the SO239 barrel I packed hastily the night before. I push away my fear since I'm not needing this right now, and I continue to unpack the radio, noticing that to my immense relief, the knobs are still attached. Set it all up, pull the power cable from the 12-volt, 80-amp-hour AGM deep cycle battery, quote, ideal for a four-wheel drive, caravan and camping trailers, end quote, which I bought 4 years ago to power my dash cams and the radio. It's automatically charged by a 360-watt DC-to-DC converter that's connected to the alternator in the car, because I don't want my dash cams, or radio for that matter, to stop me from starting the car. Ask me how I know. The power leads are long enough to make it out of the boot, and I connect the inline voltmeter to the battery, 12.6 volt, the same as what I saw when I checked it a week earlier. I mount the VHF multiband antenna connected to the radio after pulling out the N-type to PL259 adapter, which is on the list and part of the standard kit. I take a breath and turn on my radio, tune to the local repeater frequency and hit the PTT. The radio is set to 5 watts, and I'm hoping to hear the repeater tone. Nothing. I check all the repeaters in my radio, about 7 of them. None of them do anything. Then, I hear a click. I've been on air for all of 3 minutes. I notice the radio is turned off. I've seen this before. Sometimes stray RF gets into something and causes the radio to stop. I turn it back on and notice the voltage on the display of the radio. 9.65 volts. That is not good. I check the inline voltmeter. It doesn't even display anything. I turn off the radio to save what little power I have. I take a moment to consider and attach the HF antenna, hoping that I can run the radio for a few seconds to check the local 10-meter repeater. All is good to go. Turn on the radio and it won't even turn on, just flickering on and off. I feel like I want to cry, but there doesn't seem to be any point. I pack everything back up. The water, my hat, the radio, the coax, the antennas, the table, the chair, put it all back in where it came from, even the sandwich I was going to have for lunch. After slowly reversing out of the car bay, looking carefully at the ground to make sure I didn't leave anything behind, I make my way out of the park. I've been there for a grand total of 29 minutes. I briefly entertain the idea of going to the nearest electronics store and spending $50 on a small battery. But I don't actually have a working charger, and spending several hundred dollars on a charger and battery is not really in my budget at the moment. Whilst I was driving home, I got a notification that the power was out at my QTH. I got home 52 minutes after the power went out. It stayed off for the next 6 hours. So much for being productive. My friend Charles, November Kilo 8 Oscar, tells me that his first few activations were a bust. He's a Sapphire POTAR activator with 609 activations across 372 parks. So there's hope for me yet. In looking back at this adventure, I was planning for failure. I'd thought through all the different permutations of what might happen. Not for one moment did I consider that my battery might be a single point of failure. That said, there were hints that not all was well. The 12.6 volts was one hint. The fact that my dash cams have been acting up was another. I had been on the hunt for a battery monitor for the past 2 years to discover precisely what was going on, but I haven't found one that doesn't require a specific app that needs to know where you are or what's in your diary, so I put it out of my mind. As it happens, that was where I made my rookie mistake. Mind you, part of me knows that I don't have another battery anyway, so it really didn't matter if the battery was faulty or not. Either way, I wasn't going to connect my radio to my car battery. I learned that lesson well over a decade ago. I'm back to the drawing board. It's unlikely we'll use that location to activate for the 750th edition of F-Troop, but when I get my power situation sorted out, it's still a lovely place to get on air and make some noise. I'm Ono. Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima, Alpha Bravo.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6ARN, originating on the News West Linked Repeater Network and HF Relays.
Good morning once again. This is Roy, VK6 X-Ray Victor. Yes, I'm back. I've been in hospital again. The ground came up to meet me once again. Gravity is very serious around here, very serious commodity, and there's too much of it. I'm trying to stay vertical for a little while. But if you have any items for next week, I have one here for you today from Gus for the 20th of October 2025. He's looking for an antenna tuning unit. It's a PALSTAR, Papa Alpha Lima Sierra Tango Alpha Romeo, a PALSTAR type Alpha Tango 1 kilo Papa. Must be in good working condition. He's got warping condition here. It's faster than the speed of light. Let him know if you have one and would like to relinquish it to Gus, VK6 Whiskey Bravo, who's looking for one and would like to hear from you. His email address is victorkilo6whiskeybravo@yahoo.com, VK6whiskeybravo@yahoo.com, or SMS to 0407 030-592. Thank you. That's all I have for you. If you have any ideas for next week, I'll probably be still here if I'm lucky and still be vertical, hopefully, and I'll attend to your wishes as they come in. Please email me, vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. This is the only address you need, victorkilo6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. 7-3 until next time we meet.
Hi there, it's Clinton, VK6FCRC, back with you. And did you know that News West is now on YouTube? Type in youtube.com/@NewsWestWeeklyPodcast-Kilo Zulu 7 Yankee Charlie. Oh, and before I go, I'd like to thank those watching on YouTube or ATV and you for listening. I'd also like to thank our team, the broadcasters, and those submitting content each week. Please stand by now for callbacks after the broadcast, or head over to the VK6.net website and fill out the form so we know how many people are listening each week.